You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Content warning: this next piece discusses xenophobia, racism, and far-right violence. In mid-May, the world was shocked when an armed man entered a supermarket in Buffalo, New York, and opened fire on ordinary shoppers. It soon became clear that the shooting was a white supremacist terrorist attack. The shooter cited talking points from a new sector of the far right to justify his actions. This ideology is called ecofascism. Jack talked to author and activist Byron Clark, an expert on the far right and disinformation, to find out what ecofascism is and why we should be concerned about it.
What is ecofascism?
So ecofascism is a variant of fascism that takes into account ecology and the environment. So it may acknowledge climate change, or I think there are, if you look at the far right in New Zealand today, I wouldn't say ecofascism is a particularly big tendency in there, because there's also a lot of climate change denial, but I think even with that, some of these ecofascist ideas can infiltrate the section of the far right that is still under climate change denial, because they can still use environmentalism or ecology to justify things like restricting immigration. That's a big one. It's this idea that if we allow people to immigrate here, that's going to have a detrimental effect on the environment because of the greater use of resources and so forth. I think you can trace some of these ideas back to the original, 20th century fascism, like the whole ideas around like blood and soil and people being tied to the land and other people being foreigners and not part of that ecology the way that the native white people in Europe were, for example.
And do you think that these people are actually environmentalists, or is this really just a scheme to continue pushing xenophobic and racist narratives?
It's hard to say. I think for some of them, there would be some genuine environmental concerns there. I think, some of these ideas have had an influence in the more mainstream environmental movement. And I think some people have come out of that and then developed sort of more eco-fascist ideas when they start to believe that, the root problem with that environmental degradation is too many people, then they can develop these xenophobic ideas and also eugenicist ideas about restricting population and things like that. So I think for some of them it's a genuine environmentalism, and I think for others it's a way to make their fascist ideas more palatable by claiming that they're doing it not because of any kind of racial supremacy, but because of a, genuinely environmental concern. So I think there's a mix of true believers and opportunists in there.
After the Buffalo shooting last month or a couple of months ago, it was very clear that the shooter was an eco-fascist, and he was obviously very young. And a lot of these ideas have been picked up online through, far-right sectors of the internet, and even quite a lot of, internet memes. Do you think that big tech companies should be doing more to restrict this kind of content?
I think there's more that big tech companies could be doing. I think since the Christchurch call, more has been done. One thing I've been looking at recently with the book I'm writing is looking at the ways that algorithms used by YouTube and Facebook have played a big role in influencing people towards disinformation and, in some cases, actual far-right content and ideas. Facebook did a number of their own internal studies around 2016, where they found that they could make a new account, and based on giving this person a few personality attributes, like being a conservative and a Christian and so forth, that it wouldn't take long before the algorithm would start suggesting this person joined like QAnon conspiracy groups and groups that actually violated Facebook's own terms and conditions, but were still being promoted by the algorithm because this account they created had a similar personality type to others in these groups. And I think that sort of thing's been tightened up a little bit. Similar thing with YouTube, where the algorithm, in an effort to just keep your eyes on the screen for as long as possible, would suggest videos that were increasingly extreme. So you might start out watching a you know, more mainstream conservative piece of content, like something from Fox News, and then you'd get something a little bit more conspiratorial, and then you'd end up on, you know, someone like Stefan Molyneux or Alex Jones, both of which people have been banned from YouTube now. So that's an example of how they've done a bit. But I think there's potentially still more that could be done in that space, and particularly in some of the newer social media spaces that I'm a bit less familiar with, but that younger people are using, like TikTok and on Discord and these spaces. I think that's somewhere to look at as well. I also think it's important to acknowledge that you know, having technical fixes isn't going to be the only solution, because one thing that we have seen since Facebook and YouTube and Twitter as well, and Twitter famously banned, I think, 70,000 accounts after the insurrection in the US last year. So these mainstream social media sites have made an effort, at least, to stop the flow of some of this hate and misinformation. But a lot of people have migrated to what's sometimes called alt-tech, like alternative platforms like Telegram and Gab, Donald Trump's new social media platform, Truth Social. So now that these ideas are very much out there and have a not insignificant number of adherents, they're going to continue to look for ways to spread their ideas online. So while there's more that some of the big social media companies could be doing, we need to be aware not to see it as a panacea for this issue.
We've seen overseas a lot of mainstream, especially conservative politicians, sort of push this narrative, like Tucker Carlson on Fox News, Marine Le Pen spoke a lot about immigration's sort of effect on climate change, and in the US we've seen sort of the more right wing arm of the Republicans, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, push these narratives. Should we be concerned about what is essentially fascist ideology streaming into mainstream politics?
Yeah, definitely. And that's, I think, a point I've tried to make with some of my activism and my writing. It's more about the ideas than the individuals. So we have in this country some far-right groups that are very small, and it's highly unlikely that a far-right group will get the numbers to, you know, cross the MMP 5% threshold and get into Parliament. But what we do sometimes see happening is these smaller parties that are polling at like 1 or 1.5%, if they start pushing a particular idea and then the larger parties think, hey, they're polling at 1%, we could increase our vote if we maybe adopt some of their policies, then those far-right ideas can sort of move into the mainstream. And an example of that would be the campaign against the UN Migration Compact, which started in Europe with the group Generation Identity and spread around Europe and had an influence there on some of the far-right parties that did have seats in parliaments in Europe. But when it reached New Zealand, the first groups to adopt this idea of like the New Conservative Party, and their outside parliament polled very low, but at these rallies and things they were having, they started to get a bit of momentum, and then ACT started sending representatives to the rallies, and ACT adopted this policy, and then after that the National Party adopted the policy as well. And there was a brief scandal after the Christchurch shooting when it emerged that National had taken a petition off their website against the UN Migration Compact after it became known that the shooter had written on one of his guns, "Here's your Migration Compact." He was motivated by this campaign as well. And I think while mainstream parties are going to be a little bit more careful now after the Christchurch shooting to try and, you know, win a few extra votes by adopting a, you know, a conspiracy or a misinformation campaign originating on the far right, I certainly don't think it's something we'll never see again. And I think with the eco-fascism and eco-fascist ideas specifically, we're at a time now where we're probably going to look back in a few years and see this sort of time period as the beginning of something that is going to be more significant. Because one of the things we're going to see with climate change, a lot of parts of the world which are quite densely populated are going to, for one reason or another, become much less livable. So we've already seen, like in Pakistan, these heat waves where they're getting over 40 degrees, and you know, people are dying from heat stroke. And some low-lying countries are going to start to see flooding and the failure of crops and things. And what that's going to cause is a lot of people are going to start moving around the world. And when they do that, they're going to move within countries, but they're also going to cross borders. So we're going to see a lot more international migration. We're going to see a lot more refugees, and it's going to be driven by climate change. And I think that when we start to see that, it'll be like the refugee crisis of 2015, which was the impetus for a lot of political parties and politicians in Europe to fear-monger about immigration and grow their audience and their support base with this issue. We're probably going to see that on a much bigger scale. And when that starts happening, when we're seeing the effects of climate change in a much more significant way than we're seeing now, although we're already starting to see it, but it's going to get worse. I think when that happens, we're going to see a lot more eco-fascist talking points making their way into the mainstream, particularly if we have politicians like the ones you've mentioned, holding office in the US or in Europe, or potentially we could end up with some politicians here who, not necessarily coming from a far-right organisation, but who have been influenced by that and start pushing some of those talking points.
That was Byron Clark speaking to Jack about the rise of ecofascism in the far right.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.